Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Soleri Report. We have a open public report today, and it's a great pleasure to welcome a man who needs no introduction to the Soleri office, Senator Frank Nicely from the Tennessee Senate, who is, as you know, a great hero, both in the food networks and the financial networks here at Soleri. He joins us from Tennessee and from Nashville, and let me tell you a few things about him. He represented his district. He grew up in Knox County near in Knoxville, Tennessee, and he represents a county, Jefferson County. He moved over from Knox County to Jefferson County, so the eastern part of the state. He is a farmer. He's got family members who are farmers. You're raising up, Frank, a couple of farmers, and he represented Tennessee in the House, Tennessee House, from 1988 to 92. And then again from 2004 to 2012, and then switched to the Senate. And for those of us who live in Tennessee and appreciate what Senator Nicely does, he and his colleagues have done an extraordinary amount to make Tennessee one of the most attractive places to move to right now in the last couple of years. So I think I told you when I saw you, Knoxville, Senator, that Nashville in 2020 was the number one location for U-Haul at one-way drop-offs. And I'd like to credit you and your colleagues for some of that. We're going to be talking today about the opportunities and challenges for the state of Tennessee. And of course, that has implications for other states as well. But before I describe our outline, Senator, I just want to say welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Catherine. I think this could be off to a good start here. We could educate some of our colleagues on the why we really need this bank depository and precious metals. And you know so much about it, and you've influenced so many people. And I mean, and you're turning liberals back to Republicans, to Democrats. I mean, Democrats back to Republicans. And my oldest daughter just thinks you're the hero of the world. So just a pleasure to be here.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. And your daughter is also not just a farmer, but a very talented musician. I've been listening to her music, so. Okay, so let me describe our outline today. I want to talk a little bit about the opportunities and challenges that the state faces, and then go into three areas we're going to cover. One is a sovereign state bank, why it's so important, and why what it could do for Tennessee. I want to talk about gold investment purchases and the benefits for a sovereign government like the state of Tennessee to make purchases of precious metals, and then talk about having your own depository for whether precious metals or other items, and why that is such a value to the state and the citizens of the state. And then close with a little more on some of the immediate risk issues that we face and next steps. It's real important before we finish that the citizens know what they can do to support your efforts. So with that, any comments on the outline? Are you ready to dive in?
Ready to go.
Okay. Well, I just told you when we began that Dr. Mark Skidmore, a great colleague and friend of mine who has done a lot looking at the corruption in the federal finances, just sent me an analysis and showed me that next year, approximately half of the government revenues, in the best case, will be needed to pay interest on the debt. And what that means is we're going to be in a position of borrowing money to pay the interest on the debt and the, you know, the must-do entitlements that the government is obligated to make. So, you know, some folks call it a debt spiral where you got more debt than you can handle and you just have to keep borrowing to keep your debt floating. And it's a bad place to be, and it's part of the reason we're all feeling the pinch of higher prices and inflation. So speak to us a little bit about the challenges you see Tennessee facing.
Well, Tennessee's in great shape financially. We, in the last 10 years, we've abolished inheritance tax, gift tax, the holiday income tax, the professional tax. We abolished these taxes. We end up with more money. Our retirement fund is fully funded. One of only one or two states that has fully funded. But sooner or later, states like California and New Jersey, and they're going to try to figure out ways to steal our purchasing power from our, right. And inflation's the way they do that. I mean, the government, the federal government ships money to California, and they steal our purchasing power. So our goal here in Tennessee is preserve what we have. How do we preserve the standard of quality of living we have here and our good financial position? And I think one way we do that is with a state bank, like North Dakota. North Dakota's state bank since 1919. It weathered the Great Depression and weathered the Great Inflation, and it's still doing great. It puts money back into the general fund. But here's one thing that other states, when they try to pass the state banks, the banks usually fight them. But we've got to educate the banks. The state bank is actually the savior for some of these small banks.
Right.
If you want to keep our small community banks going, we need a state bank. And it won't compete with them. It will support them.
Right.
And that's one of our, in getting the votes to pass this, we're going to have to educate our banks. Hey, we're not your enemy. We're actually your friend.
Right.
But maybe you can comment on that.
So that is absolutely true. I believe one of the reasons that you see local economies that are so healthy in Tennessee is you still have preserved a tremendous number of local and community banks. And that is exceptionally healthy for the local economy, both because you have money circulating locally, but you have an infrastructure of people who are very literate and helpful in terms of making small business go and small farming. So,
well, it only helps the banks. It helps to save savings and loans, or not the savings and loan, the credit unions.
Credit unions.
It also helps credit unions. North Dakota, more small banks than any other state. And that's because supported by the state bank and not the Federal Reserve and out of Washington and the New York banks.
Right. So I agree with you. I think it's exceptionally important to win the support of the financial institutions in the state, particularly the ones that support small business and small farms. I also think it's important to have a bank that handles the state business that is loyal to the state. So I was talking to one person about this who's outside the state, and they said, oh, you ought to call it the Volunteer Sovereign State Bank. He was very impressed by the Tennessee victory over Alabama when he was there. Anyway, but having a state depository that can handle the state's business but do it in a way that is good and supportive of the local banks, one of the things it does is it helps protect the local banks and financial institutions from different actions by the central bank. So if you look at things the central bank does in periods like the financial crisis that cause tremendous dislocation for the local institutions, I think having a good, well-run state bank can protect them from the Fed cycles in a way that, and it's not surprising that North Dakota has the most institutions as a result of having that kind of protection. So now I would point out that at the Bank of North Dakota, the citizens can deposit at the Bank of North Dakota. But if you look at the services it offers, it doesn't compete with the local banks. So
no, has one physical location. So it doesn't compete with the local bank. That's
right.
That's the common misconception that a lot of the bankers would think, well, we don't want our competition. Well, you're not getting competition, you're getting support.
Right. And exactly. Well, I'm with you. I think if you look at where the federal government is going, it is essential for Tennessee to have a state sovereign bank. It can make
the government's the world. I mean, the world financial system is in a turmoil that very few people understand right now, how bad it really is.
Right.
Like you say, when it takes 50% to pay your interest on your loans, I mean, the feds are in trouble, the Federal Reserve, they're out of trick. They're at the end of the rope. They've got the longest running fiat money in the world since 1971. They've had fiat money. You know, Genghis Khan could only make it go 7 years, but they've made it go 50 years, I guess, 52 or 3 years. And that's as long as it can probably go. We've got to get something to protect Tennessee. My job is to worry about Tennessee, but I'm a Tennessean first.
Right.
I'm an American second, but I'm a Tennessean first. And
I thought you were the mayor of Appalachia first.
Well, I am the mayor of greater Appalachia.
Okay, well, let's move to gold investment, because gold investment is another thing the state can do to provide financial resilience. So tell us what you've proposed in terms of gold investment for the state.
Well, with how our bank, I guess, would be different from North Dakota Bank, we would be a bank and depository.
Right.
Where locals could deposit their gold and their silver. You know, the central banks around the world are buying gold, and they're telling us to buy Bitcoin, but they're buying gold and silver and precious metals. So our bank would need to be a depository to where people from Europe, if they wanted to come over here and bring their wealth and put it in a gold bank here in Tennessee. Tennessee has a hot brand right now. Everybody loves Tennessee, and for good reason. But our bank would be a bank and a depository.
Well, so I wanted to point out that I was looking at the Texas Depository. The one state in the country that has created a depository is Texas. They have the Texas Bullion Depository. And I was looking at it the other day, and they were promoting themselves as you could invest in gold and silver through the in Texas, have it delivered to the depository, and you didn't have to pay sales tax because there was no sales tax on precious metals in Texas. And I thought Senator Nicely is going to be pleased because the Tennessee Depository, when it comes into being, will compete successfully because you got the sales tax pulled off of precious metals. Isn't that correct?
We did this year, finally, after several years. We worked on it several years, but we have such a surplus right now that we're able to do some things. That's another tax that we have abolished here in Tennessee, is the tax on gold and silver and precious metals.
So a state depository gives you an organization basically governed and controlled by the state. In Texas, it's an agency of the state, but it gives you a physical location where both the state and the state, you know, say that if the state pension fund was going to invest, it could deposit there, and the citizens, as well as other investors from outside the state, can deposit gold and silver. And just what I will tell you as somebody who worked for many years as an investment advisor, a state-governed depository in a well-managed state such as Tennessee is amazingly attractive to investors. They would far prefer a sovereign state depository than a private depository for obvious reasons. So, if this is associated with the bank, then you have both functions and services for the state and for the citizens, which are create far more conditions of financial stability within the state.
Well, that's true. And, you know, nobody wants to think about the United States breaking up, and we all hope and pray that it never does. But the Soviet Union broke up. I mean, there's no guarantee that we don't break up into two or three countries. But if we do, if it breaks up overnight, Tennessee becomes a nation. Right. And we need a bank, and we need a gold reserve. And of course, we'll need probably some protection, a little more militia or something. But we hope that doesn't happen. But it's just like in farming. You hope for the best, but you plan for the worst.
Worst.
And you take what comes with equanimity, but it's, right. You know, at this point, anything could happen. And there's no downside to having a gold reserve. Gold and silver never been worth zero. I've bought stocks that eventually went to zero. Gold and silver has never been worth zero in the history of the world.
So here's what's interesting. If it turns out in the worst case you need it, they're there. If it turns out you don't need it, you are still tremendously advantaged, as has been proven by both the state of North Dakota and Texas. These things are a tremendous advantage either way it goes.
And other states, Nevada, Utah, Wyoming, New Hampshire, they're issuing goldbacks.
Goldbacks, right.
And which actually has physical gold in the it's the size of a dollar bill, but it actually has gold in there.
Right.
So we're not the only one that's thinking about trying to get ahead of this problem.
So what about the Tennessee? I know Tennessee has a rainy day fund. You've been able to set aside money in a reserve fund. What about purchases of gold and silver in the reserve funds, particularly if you get a depository?
Well, that's what the treasurer would rather, our treasurer, David Leonard, would rather see the money in the rainy day fund than in the pension fund. Right. And depending on, he needs to make a certain level of 6% or something
right.
a year to maintain the thing. And he's afraid the gold wouldn't do that.
Right.
So he would rather put the gold and silver in the rainy day fund, which we right. have a healthy rainy day fund. I think over a billion in the rainy day fund.
Right. But I'm a believer that it is prudent for the state of Tennessee to put a portion of the rainy day fund or some of its reserves in precious metals. It's I call it a core position, you know, so it's there for the worst case.
Texas bought $1 billion worth of gold for their teachers fund several years ago, probably 10 years ago. And they stored it in New York for a while. And
right.
they decided, we don't want Texas gold in New York. We want Texas gold in Texas. And that's when right. they started and built their depository.
Right. Okay. Let's look at who in the state you would like to learn more about this and take a role in helping to figure out how to make it happen. So we talked about the bankers, the small banks, the credit unions, other small financial institutions in the state. Who else should care about this? What about the Tennessee media? Should they care?
Well, yep, they probably would. It's, you know, there's someone against everything. you come up with a bill down here, I tell people if I had a cure for cancer, the Undertaker would fight me in the committee. You know, it is something. Somebody's always against everything. But if we could get the bankers on our side and make them realize that this is to help and not to hurt, of course, I'm hoping that maybe the governor, the Speaker of the House, Speaker of the Senate can watch this video and learn a little bit more about it and get their curiosity up where they can do their own research
right.
and learn more. But, you know, that's a good question. Who would be against it other than the bankers?
I have to tell you, I think the small investors and the small business people and some of the small farmers have a vested interest in this happening. So anybody who's got a family enterprise of any kind, it is so much to their benefit to have financial stability at a sovereign state level. Again, whichever way the federal government goes, they need more stability and more resilience in the financial system. If, you know, it's funny, if you look at the BRIC nations complaining about using the dollar for trade, you know, the small business people in Tennessee, of which I'm one of them, have the same problem. So, you know, you've got a group of people, the central bankers, who are using the dollar as a weapon of war. And meantime, you're trying to use it to do your business and it's not working, you know, because it's not clear whether it's a, you know, it's a currency or a weapon of war. And
back to who would fight us. When North Dakota started their state bank in 1919, the Federal Reserve were just 5 or 6 years old.
Right.
And they didn't have time to go fight something in South Dakota.
Right.
I think today they would fight. I think the feds, in their devious way of laundering pressure and support and lobbying money around, I think the Federal Reserve would come in. We wouldn't know. They wouldn't say they're the Federal Reserve, but right. I think they would send people in here and fight us.
Right.
I don't think would want us to do this.
Right.
And that's another good reason to do it.
The more they fight it, the more you know you need it. You have to have it.
Right.
I couldn't agree more. So let's talk about some of the risks on the horizon. And one of the risks that I have been very vocal about is central bank digital currencies, what some people call CBDCs. And I think CBDCs pose a tremendous danger to the state of Tennessee, to the citizens, likewise, all citizens anywhere, but certainly throughout America. And what I'd like to do before we dive into CBDCs, I'd like to show a video, which is my number one top video that I've shown in the last 2 years. It's 56 seconds long. And it's Augustine Karstens, who is the general manager of the Bank of International Settlements in Switzerland, which is the central bank of central banks for the big central banks around the world. And he was giving a talk at an IMF payment conference or panel, and was asked about CBDCs, and he proceeds to explain three things. First of all, that central bank digital currency, think of this as a cryptocurrency from the central banks, is not your money. He calls it an expression of central bank liability. In other words, it's theirs, not yours. So that's point number one. Point number two is that they can set the rules of how you can use it. So if you're in Knoxville and you want to drive to Nashville and they decide that you shouldn't be able to drive to Nashville, you know, you can't buy gas, you know, outside of the area that they want you buying gas. Or if you want to buy chocolate and they decide chocolate's not good for you, you can't buy chocolate with your central bank digital currency. So then he explains, so they can set the rules of how you can use their money. And then three, the third thing he says is they have the tools digitally to enforce the rules. So that means if they want to raise taxes and take it out of your account, they can and will.
Aren't our analysis on CBDC in particular for the use of general, to the general use, we tend to establish the equivalence with cash. And there is a huge difference there. For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who's using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability. And also, we will have the technology to enforce that. Those two issues are extremely important, and that makes a huge difference with respect to what cash is.
What effect is central bank digital currency going to have on our traditional banks?
It will wipe them out. Now, there are many different ways of rolling out central bank digital currencies. And there are ways I can roll it out that involve the banks, use the banks for tech support, and run the system cooperatively. So dollars and Federal Reserve notes are still outstanding while CBDCs are coming in. And I can use that to lull the banks into believing that they will still have a market and a business and a role. But it is a fait accompli at the end of the day that they will be wiped out. In other words, you are going to wipe out all local community banks, all credit unions, all small institutions within some period of time. And it'll take you a while to wipe them out. But if you look at what it will do to their fundamental economics, and you're going to put them in a position where they have to work for you, they can't represent their customer.
Was Dodd-Frank not hard on all these little banks?
Yes. So we've gone through, I call it the financial coup. So we've literally had a coup d'etat through the financial system where the central banks and the large banks have asserted more and more and more control and dramatically reduced the number of small banks. And it's one of the reasons that our economy is nowhere near as wealthy as it could be. The more you decentralize in ways that are healthy for the economy, the wealthier the economy is going to be. So this has been devastating to family and community wealth, and it has made life extremely difficult for the local and state governments to stay fiscally sound. And one of the miracles of Tennessee is if you look at how prudently the pension fund has been managed and how prudently the state budget has been managed, it is astonishing given the headwinds financially created by the centralization promoted by the central banks and now the Treasury. So this has been a terrible headwind on our economy.
So you're saying if we did have a state bank at a depository, it would help the small banks push back against not only Dodd-Frank, but against the central bank digital currency.
Absolutely.
That might be the most important, that statement right there might be the most important thing in this video.
Yes.
If we don't have a state bank that can help our small banks and our small credit unions,
right,
the central bank digital currency is going to eventually wipe them out.
Here's because this is a very I agree with you. This is the most important point. Unless we have a sovereign state government protecting sovereign individuals who are free to transact, including transact privately, you know, without invasive technology, we will have no sovereignty. And then you're talking about 100% central control by the bankers. And the expression that I use, which I think is very accurate, is we're talking about a technology that, in combined with other systems, can turn your home, your car, and your community into a digital concentration camp. We're talking about the end of human freedom and centrally controlled through the financial system. So, you know, we must have states and citizens, and with them, community banks and other financial institutions that have the ability to protect free transactions.
And I would create the largest, the biggest black market to ever was. I mean, Americans, we'd have a black market, could not believe. And a black market, I mean, I think, as far as I know, a black market's a free market.
So here's the secret in all of this. I mean, the really good news in all of this is if you understand how much central control has dampened our life, our health, our, you know, how much the constraining of freedom through the financial system has dampened our total wealth, the wealth potential, if we could get this going right, is fantastic. That's the big secret in all of this. You know, there is plenty for everybody if we're willing to manage things in a responsible way.
Well, it's like when we cut taxes, Catherine. We said if we cut taxes, we'll have a surplus. No one, a few people believe it. Not everyone believes that. There's still people who do not believe that if you cut taxes, you would have more tax revenue. But right. It worked. We've proven it, and still, and even though we've proven it, people still don't believe it will work.
It's reality isn't sufficient to persuade them.
Pardon?
The reality of what has happened isn't sufficient to persuade them.
They think it was a one-time fluke, won't happen again. You know, they say, well, you can't do that again. You can't do that trick again. But, Art Laffer would argue with you. Art would tell you that. And Art lives here in Nashville now. Tennessee's attracted so many people.
I know.
From all over the world, like you and Art Laffer. But you can't believe the people that have moved into Nashville.
I have, because, you know, coming through this last time, I met just wonderful people. They're pouring in. So I do have to say this one thing. When Tennessee does a state bank and a state depository and buys some precious metals in its reserve funds, you know, the call will go out internationally to investors. And your problem as a senator is, how are you going to handle the growth?
Well, that's a good problem to try to take care of.
Okay.
Especially in a world like the turmoil, I mean, that's wealth is wealth. I mean, you can't destroy all wealth. And the more gold and silver and wealth we have in Tennessee, the better Tennessee will be. It's hard to make. You can't make money off poor people. You make money off people that's got money. So you got to have a few people around to make have some money.
Right. Right. Well, it's funny because, you know, I just drove all across the state of Tennessee. I came from Texas and then I went up to Pennsylvania. And I saw something that I didn't expect to see. And it was really very inspiring. And the best example was I was talking to my cousin's daughter, who's 10, and she just finished studying the Revolutionary War. And we wanted her to tell us what she learned in class. And she turned with pride and she said, "We fought for our freedom and we won."
That's true. That is true. The American Revolution, it was a civil war. I bet half the Americans didn't care one way or the other.
Yeah.
All the German didn't care because the king, the third, or George III, he was German. So all these German immigrants, they said, "That's all right. England's got a German king. That's fine." You know, it's interesting to study the Revolution.
Right. But there was a very powerful feeling of we're Americans, we're free, and we're going to stay free. And that's just how it's going to be. So I was very inspired and glad to see and feel that after all the events of the last 3 years.
Well, you know, George Washington had to give it up. He said, all hope is gone. And then General Ferguson sent word over here to the East Tennessee and made the East Tennesseans mad. And so they went over the mountain to Kings Mountain. And at Kings Mountain, they killed Ferguson and changed the war. It was a turning point of the war.
Really?
So East Tennessee saved the day during the Revolution. And we may have to save the day now again.
Well, I will say this. The folks over in East Tennessee are pretty ornery.
We are, yeah, right. We are. Proud of it.
Okay, so if I'm listening to this and I'm in Tennessee, particularly if I'm in the state legislature involved in politics in Nashville, how can I learn more? How can I help you?
Well, we got to find what the questions are. When we introduce this, what we're trying to do, and people listen to this interview, and they're going to come back with questions. And at that point, right, we're going to answer their questions. And like I say, when you're dealing with us politicians, don't assume we're real smart. I
mean, right.
You know, we're all smart in maybe one subject, but not all subjects.
Right.
So we have to keep it down level. It's easy to talk over people's heads. We've got to make it simple. And that's what I try to do is boil it down and make it simple. And sometimes on with a subject like this, that's hard. When you're talking about international banking and all different things that's going on in the world and a Bank of International Settlements and the World Bank and all this stuff and the Federal Reserve. And it's just, it's hard to boil that down to where the average guy like me can understand it.
Right. So if I'm got a radio show or a TV show in Tennessee and I want to get you on to explain, you available?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Politicians like to talk.
Well, I heard you give a speech in Knoxville that was outstanding. So I definitely, you know, you may talk, but you make a lot of sense and you get a lot of people laughing. It was great.
That was a great conference. 1,500 good people that were interested in food freedom and good food and good health. And you save your wealth by not getting sick.
Exactly.
If you can stay healthy and eat good food and be healthy, then you don't waste your money at the hospital.
Exactly. So exactly.
You made that point the other day, and I thought, man, that makes so much sense. There's a good reason. And I've told people for years, we try to sell good food from farm, and it costs a little extra. And I tell people, good food is cheaper than doctor bills.
Yes, it is.
It's a lot cheaper than doctor bills.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think I said it in my speech, when I became an investment advisor, I was shocked at the number of pretty wealthy people who thought they couldn't afford to spend extra to get really high quality food. And it shocked me. I used to get in these some pretty serious debates trying to explain the economics of not getting sick. Anyway. Okay, well, Senator Nicely, any other thoughts, anything else you want to add before we close?
Oh, I just want to thank you for doing this, and maybe hopefully we can answer some questions and stimulate some curiosity. And like I'd say, there's a lot of upside potential, no downside on what we're trying to do. And we've just got to educate these banks and to let them know that the state bank is going to be their friend, not their enemy. Our goal is to keep our local banks in business.
Just as a financial person, I want to give a message to the bankers and anybody in the credit union business, anybody in the local financial institution business. This is your pathway to preserve your business long run. If you don't do this, you are going to get wiped out and it's not going to be pretty. So please take the time to invest in learning about this and how this can be part of, you know, creating far more wealth for you and your depositors and the people of Tennessee. This is absolutely essential. You know, if you don't do this, you're going to be out of business. That's the bottom line.
You know, it's a lot to think about.
It's a lot to think about, but I am a perpetual optimist. But if you look at the thing that's so amazing about America and about Tennessee is if you look at how well we're doing despite all of this, it's incredible. And if you look at the beauty of the land and the water and the resources of a Tennessee and some of its neighbors that you might get together in a compact, we have enough skills, enough talent, and enough wealth to make it work.
And even with these high gas prices and high diesel prices, the traffic on the interstates is phenomenal. I mean, people don't know that there's any hard times out here. It's crazy.
Well,
and
no,
it's really encouraging.
Yeah.
To see people out moving around, going about their life. You know, they're happy going, we're doing what they're doing. They don't have a mask on now. They're just having a big time.
Well, that's why I told you your problem, Senator Nicely, is when the world gets a load of what's happening in Tennessee, you know, get ready for a lot of talent to pour in.
Well, we're having lots of people move in now. It's unbelievable. It's the people that are moving north and the south and the west. And it's, you know, they as long as they become like us, that'll be fine. Don't tell us how they did it back home. We don't want to hear it.
Senator Nicely, I can't tell you how what a pleasure it is for me to live in a state where you are in the Senate doing what you're doing. And if there's anything we and our network can do to help you do that, you just let us know. We will be there.
Well, we're proud to have people like you, and we'll stay in touch, and we're not going to give up. Sometimes it takes a while to get these things going, but we just need good people educating their politicians and make them realize there's no downside. There's no risk.
Absolutely no downside to this. None at all.
None at all. Yeah. Well, thank you for helping, and I just can't wait till you come up with something new so I can read it. It's amazing.
Okay, Senator Nicely, you have a great day.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.